Aloha. My name is Makala Nakoa Shelley Mahi. And I wanted to talk about the ocean mining issue. In June, they had a meeting up at the United Nations, the Oceans Conference, and it was to talk about sustainability. And the International Seabed Authority had come across that ocean mining is sustainable. Actually, it's not sustainable because once you retrieve the resources, then it's gone. And so they tried to say that you would have what's called these biological reserves and that it would recolonize the area. But even in the International Seabed Authority's own environmental guidelines, it showed that after 7 years that it never recolonized to the original species distribution. So I work with different people, but I'm very hopeful, as is Sylvia Earle, about this is with Mission Blue, and so they're looking at the ocean mining issue. They actually went to the UN conference. And the thing is these hope spots. So the hope spots, they're like the biological reserves, but it's more like that you want to reserve this area because that's where the certain fish spawns. And what had happened with Sylvia Earle was that first she went to her favorite bay somewhere down near Australia called Coral Bay. And so then it was beautiful. It was blue, the coral, the fish, everything.
I've been there.
Well, she went back, and there's a big track going through it as if a remote control vehicle had gone through. Everything was smothered. And so when I saw the footage, I said, wow, that looks exactly like the International Seabed Authority's mining guidelines, how it looks, how it piles up and whatnot. So I contacted Mission Blue and then also saw them at the UN Conservation Conference in Honolulu. So the thing is... NOAA, they have the mining part of it with Department of Commerce, Lockheed and whatnot, but NOAA also has the fishery parts. So the thing is we have to look at it in a certain way. The main thing is that a lot of the people coming out of the conference said, we don't want to make the same mistake in the ocean as we made on the land. And there's so much stuff that we don't understand still about the ocean. But the thing is that here... they're going to go in under the common heritage concept. And to me, it actually is the reverse, because the common heritage concept states that we all have a stake. We're all stakeholders in the international sea where they want to do the ocean mining. And it actually contradicts the common heritage concept that they're going to section it up and certain countries are going to do ocean mining. And so that... they're going to go in with these remote controls like they possibly did at Coral Bay. And that's how it's going to be, all smothered with these falsely angulated sediments. Because the way that the machinery breaks it up from Nautilus and different companies is that it forms this triangulated sediment. And so under the Hjelmstrom report, different reports... it might even circulate the earth 5 times if it ever settles, but it impacts the fish because it can't kick it out because it's not naturally occurring. So we showed this picture, like here's Hawaii here, here's Baja California. These are where the seamounts are for the pelagic fisheries cycle. So I learned inside of marine science class that the ahi, the tuna and different pelagic species, they go out, they spawn, they circulate around in the seamounts, fatten up, go out, spawn again, and that's the cycle. So the first two mine is Commerce, which is Korea and China, and of course the United States of America, even though we're not signed on to the law of the sea, we have our domes, which is an ecological disturbance test mining that they're doing. So everyone has their ecological disturbance test money, like JET and whatnot. It's all inside the International Seabed Authority environmental guidelines.
Are they already doing that?
Yes, they've already done that. We have reports where they brought ashore the manganese nodules. They broke it down into, you know, what is the toxic components of it. And so...
can you share some literature on that with me?
Sure. Yeah, because I have the components broken down now. What happened was, okay, 1995, okay, so This is a document from 1995, but you see it's sent from executive chambers. So Patsy Mink sent this to me about the ocean mining, and it talks about how Ben Cayetano wanted to work with China. And so DBED, Department of Business, Economic and Tourism, they had made a deal with China as well, COMRA. But actually, they're not supposed to do that under international law because they're not a delegate to the UN. We're not signed on with Law of the Sea. So why are they making arrangements with foreign countries to bring in toxic waste into Hawaii?
And this was in 1995.
Well, this has been going on way before that. And the studies that we have is like DBED White Report. That was to go into cement. DBED Green Report, and that's 1981. And so those went, and ocean dumping. And so now here was one from Patsy Mink. This is 2002. And this is right before she died. Thank you for calling my office to express your concerns about the effects of China's ocean mining will have on Hawaii's marine environment, particularly the northwestern Hawaiian islands. I have followed the seabed mining ever since my service in the State Department. Any mining in the ocean is a matter of serious concern, particularly for what is done with the matter's mind. My staff has advised me that you're interested in filing a complaint with the United Nations about China's mining operations located some 500 nautical miles from the Hawaiian island. I would be interested in seeing a copy. Now, what had happened was she had said to do this that we needed to make a formal complaint, get five natives of the closest coastal impact to the mining. And so under Pierre Flamont and John Seibert, two pelagic drift specialists, they said actually right here in Kona, this is the closest coastal impact. So we did. We got the five natives together. We had all the documents in the right jurisdiction. We had Hawaiian Archipelago with a capital A because a capital A denotes a legal nation state capable of making its own treaties. So what it is that we did form it. Now, where were we to send it off to was to the United Nations Law of the Sea Seabed Disputes Chamber. Now, we're not signed on to the Law of the Sea, but because I'm not even sure, but I know that the Hawaiian Kingdom had a treaty with Hamburg, Germany, the way that Patsy Mink with Department of State and the concern and whatnot, somehow it got accepted and it was filed and it was called Case Number 17. So case number 17 was the responsibilities of states mining in the area. So what happened was the final outcome of it was not satisfactory because, one, it said, yes, there will be processing at sea, and two, that the International Seabed Authority is not responsible for the matters mined once it goes out of the area. So that's not a good answer as to what are you going to do with the toxic waste? What about the impact to the fisheries? Now, what had happened was, so in the reports, oh, here it is. It's actually the ocean is worth $2 trillion, ocean economy. So different reports are coming out. And so versus a dead ocean and the mineral mining companies with their 26 contracts, going in and tearing up all the fisheries that we're dependent on. And some of these permits are actually now from the Mid-Atlantic Ridge going from New York to Virginia.
Well, yes. I mean, there's quite a few different of these mining zones all over the whole seafloor of the whole planet.
And that's one of the things that we want to do is to go around and gather harm that has been done already within the EEZ, say Papua New Guinea, because the meeting that we were at with the Underwater Mining Institute, they ended up having a meeting down in New Zealand.
When was that?
I think it was like 2001, and they'd used some artist carving, which, you know, to represent the whole ocean mining thing. So I'm sure it was, you know, through the university there, I think it was Auckland. I'm not sure. I'd have to, you know, look at the documents. But the thing is,
does that still exist?
The Underwater Mining Institute, and then they have the International Marine Mineral Society. They have the, what they call, Doctors of Economics. So the Doctors of Economics, they're the ones doing the ocean mining proxies, bringing in the waste from BHP, Foster Beer Grants, doing the soil amendments, all the things that came out with, it's basically like nanoparticle technology put into paint. different things.
That's what they're making from this stuff.
Yeah, it's a commercial use for toxic waste. But the thing is that under the NIOSH, occupational safety and hazard creates an unsafe working environment because these buildings made with toxic waste cement are not labeled. Oh, what if we have to do demolition or something? And so you got lead, arsenic, thallium, all these different things that are inside of there. And now this meeting for March, that's what we want to look at. This is this month, March. International Seabed Authority is having a meeting with all the stakeholders. And they're saying, oh, should the decisions of the Seabed Disputes Chamber be recognized and final? And see, the agreement is, it has to be. That's where you're supposed to take your disputes to. But the thing is now, are you going to continue with the mining? Because you've already found that it can cause harm. So the thing is under Part 5, Regulation 30, that the UN Secretary shall halt the mining if harm is shown. So that's why we're going around and looking at the different harm. Now, different people like Papua New Guinea, deep sea creatures were washing up on the beach. The fishermen were really upset. The water turbidity, the water, the temperature, different things were dying. So they told Nautilus and different companies, we want out of this contract.
So Nautilus is already doing stuff.
Inside the EEZ.
I didn't think it had actually started. Is this Solwara?
Solwara Warriors.
I didn't think it had started yet.
No, because if you, I do have the documents where Nautilus went in and got agreements with the government. And so we were at the meeting with Papua New Guinea. We told them, don't do it because they're lying to you about what they're going to do with the waste and destruction of the fisheries.
The PNG government owns a certain amount of stock in that whole project.
Yes. And at the UN, I actually discussed some things with the... they go in and help different countries, you know, with the children, UNICEF and whatnot. And so I said, you know, I'm very upset because they use this poor thing video as to why... I told UNICEF, I said, the ocean mining guys use a little girl and the thing with the school that, oh, they need infrastructure and all this, and it'll all come from ocean mining. And so these are like a poor thing video. And so UNICEF was like, what? You know, they would destroy their fisheries. What are they supposed to eat? And so the Solwara, they tried to get out of it. They actually went, from what I understand, they went to a court in Australia to try to get out of it. Neptune and Nautilus, they don't want to let people out of their contracts. So now you get Fiji. Fiji and Switzerland was the one that hosted the ocean conference. Now, because also it deals with Department of State. Now, this is a problem, is that we had a report come in. Once we put the ocean mining maps onto the World Wide Web in two different sources, we got back schematics for a submarine, a stealth submarine, IR-4 worm drive, non-heat sinking, non-infrarettable, no nuclear signature, but nuclear capacity. And so this submarine, basically, the more sediments you get in the water, it throws off the sonar. They ended up finding that submarine 13 miles off the coast of Kau. So they had to escort that, and they only went out to 213 miles. And so then there was, by the Hayden Island, they ended up taking our naval reconnaissance plane while they were looking at that stealth sub. So the issue is that when we had the UN conference up in New York, I actually talked to Department of State. I says, we're looking at 26 permits. We're looking at national security risks. The more sediment that's in the water in these mining areas, it becomes a national security risk because of these stealth subs. So that's a big issue. And also, it's in a matter of fact, it's like genocide because the Hawaiian people for a long time, they have... This is all under the Star of Keawe, the creation star. This is actually the northern hemisphere. There's a certain energy and a pattern that should not be disrupted, not by ocean mining, not by coming in and tearing up the ocean. Now, these different points, the stars and navigation, that this whole thing is related to all the heiaus throughout the Pacific. It links into Hawaii through the island heiaus here. And then it creates a certain energy pattern. So I'm concerned that because of the ocean mining and what it's going to do to disrupt the cultural part, and the fisheries part, and even that they go out to certain areas and they go and get water, you know, not just water here, but they go out. The Kahuna Lapa Isles, there was telling me that, you know, the whole thing, the way that it's set up. So if the ocean mining guys come in, they're going to use Hawaii as the dumping grounds or dumping in the ocean. And so for us and the chiefs, the native Hawaii fishermen, the general citizens and the population, we're pleading to the world to please put in your public reviews, your scientific reviews, everything that you can into this, the International Seabed Authority, because we want a live ocean. We want to make sure that they do not do ocean mining, and that actually they have, yes, they have spent money to look at the ocean, to do ecological studies, and these disruption like they did in the Peruvian basin where they allowed the disclose in Germany to plow it under 80 times. What did they think was going to happen? So all these kind of things need to stop because it's already disrupting the ecosystems. And they have not come up with a good answer. What are you going to do with the waste? What about Hawaii's fisheries? They'll be directly impacted as the closest coastal impact. So please put in your public comments, everything, to the International Seabed Authority. They're located in Kingston, Jamaica. And the thing is the environmental guidelines is what you want to look at. And that we need to come together to make another seabed disputes chamber claim.
Now, Shelley, you're going to tell us about the history of your family ancestry.
Okay. Yes, I'm actually a, I guess, mixed race of a lot of different peoples. But my grandfather and my father always talked to me about the Ha'i people. And so long ago, the story was that there was this island, and there was a chief from the mountain and a chief from the sea. And the sea god came to them and told them, both of them, the same night, they had the same dream, that the cannibals were coming. There was going to be earthquakes. There was going to be tidal waves. All these things were going to happen. And so they needed to take their village and take their people and put them on a canoe, a big
ark.
And
did,
so then,
did you say that the sea god took on the form of a whale crossed with a dolphin?
Well, apparently he can take many forms.
But you can't tell me his name.
Well, I will tell you the story and how we became the Ha'i people.
Yes.
Which is actually like his name.
Well, doesn't Ha is the name for the sperm whale, isn't it? Ha, because it's the sound that his breath makes.
Really?
Yeah, that's the Maori name for the sperm whale.
Ha. I did not know that. Well, Ha in Hawaiian is the breath of life, and E is the unspoken word for Keakua. So even in the American Indian, Ha'ich, yes, I hear and obey.
Very interesting.
And the Ha'i actually goes into an unspoken language, and you can see the same symbols for Ha'ich. Okay, so what had happened was, they ran down the trails, the mountain to the, and the one from the chief from the sea, so on the same trail. And they said, I had a dream last night. And so they told their dreams. Oh, it must be true because we both had the same dream. And so the one from the ocean, the chief from the ocean said, oh, I have plenty of time. I have all these canoes. But the chief from the mountain, the one I'm directly related to, he said, oh, you know, I don't have canoes here. And he said, oh, that the one from the ocean, he wasn't going to take the elderly, he wasn't going to take the sick, and he wasn't going to take the children or the women. And that was not what the sea god and the god above had wanted. So we made a huge boat, and it had out of these reeds, and the reeds were bound like this big, each binding. And it had a huge house. You could take a whole village on it. And apparently they had dug up the fire pits and put them on the boat. They had a clay pot that it had the unspoken language on it. They would put, they had the pakele after, where they would put the 69 fish. They would leave back three. They would heat up the stones, and there was different ways that they would prepare things. And so these Ha'i people, first they were from this village, and what I've later come to know for this 12-pointed star people, the Ha'i people, is Munana, out of memory. So out of memory, this story comes. And now they go to sea on this big, huge ark. So they come down from Munana, and they go to the first point of the 12-pointed star, Hivo'oa, Marquesas. So out from there, then they go to the second point, which ended up being the doldrums, where they learned how to chant and call the wind.
Yes, but wasn't there a baby that was born with a map on its arm?
Yes, so in between the first and the second point of the 12-pointed star, the baby was born, because what had happened was the pregnant wife got down before the chief and said, I know that you have to go to sea, and it's Kapu. I cannot go to sea with you. I'm pregnant, and I'm a woman, and all these Kapu things. So the sea god came to them again and said, no, you will go, and this baby will have the mark of the 12-pointed star, and the island chain will have the map. So then they, in between the first and second point, the baby's born at night. The lightning strikes the water as they cut the cord. And then all of a sudden a big wave comes and boosh, just washes the baby away into the dark, stormy night. So everybody cries, and people are like, oh, what do we do? Wait, the baby's supposed to have the map, and now we're lost at sea. And some people actually lost faith in Keakua and Wo'i. So what happens is they all go to the other side of the ark, and a big wave, boosh, comes and washes them all away, all the complainers and the ones who lost faith, and we never saw them again. So then in the morning, there was a yellow light in the sky. And up comes, now Ha'i in Hawaii means like breaking a wave. So yes. It came breaking the wave, and it was this prehistoric dolphin whale, and it had the baby, and tossed the baby up onto the deck, and the baby was smiling and laughing. And so sure enough, it had the mark of the 12-pointed star, and it had the island chain. So what had happened was they get to the doldrums. Oh, sorry. The Ha'i said to the chief's wife in her dream, if ever you have need of me, you may call upon me. And so there's a certain chant that goes with that. Now, so they go to the doldrums, and they're stuck there. The doldrums are like, there's no wind, there's no fish, there's no rain. So they actually learned how to call the four forces of the wind. And then they ended up in the third point where they would get their tools. And so the tools, they had the Kuvehi family. And so they would meet them, and they would go up this trail. And a family joke was, we could only stay ashore as long as our hair was wet. So my grandfather told a story about how they put their hair in a gourd of water and strapped it onto their forehead and went up the trail to where the axe quarry was. But we couldn't take a stone unless there was a yellow light in the sky. And the axe quarry had to face the rising sun. So then in the end, it would go to the 16-pointed star, and that would be, it's more of a Kapu thing, and there's a certain, I guess, navigational formula that you do, but it's for also repairing your canoes, different things. So what had happened was we went out on the 12-pointed star, we went all over, and what happened was along the different way we learned different things, and it all became part of the story, and we became the Ha'i people. So we were not allowed to go ashore unless there was twin navigators. So we went past England, and that's when we had twin navigators in the 11th century. So we had, according to my grandfather, been at sea over 1,000 years. And so the women cried, because they said, we're tired of giving birth at sea. We want to feel the soil beneath our feet, and we want to go ashore. And it was, the story was that they smelled the roses on the wind. So we had the twin navigator. So my family, the firstborn chief, twin navigator, we went ashore, and we went to see the king. Now what had happened was on our ship, we had 7 ships at the time. So 4 came ashore, and 3 kept going and followed the 12-pointed star and the 16-pointed star and went to the great Apo and different, you know, paths and whatnot of those. But the thing was is that when we went ashore, they noticed that on our boats, we had a thing called the sea onion. Now the sea onion, it was I looked it up on the internet, it's like there's 2 different kinds, one for like pneumonia and medicine, one's for poison and weapons. And so this thing is like a 40-pound onion. And we actually, I know it may sound savage and everything, but we used to grow them on the guts of our enemies, and anybody who tried to come after us, that they would get what's called the lobster claw and different things, and we would make a fishnet of their guts, and we would grow this sea onion on there. Now, what happened was some of them who that had happened with, they also tried to attack us, and so then this, what they call the McCracken, came up and took down their ship. So they thought we had a baby McCracken on our boat, but really it was the sea onion. But they said that the sea god was assisting us. Now the sea god did assist us many times by giving us a gift from the god above. And part of it was that we would be protected in the mist. So that there, my grandfather said there was teeth in the mist. And nobody should try to follow us into the mist.
Yes. But look, let me ask you this. Do you think that it's possible that in the world of today, the same sea god spirit can be with us and can answer our calls for help? Because I feel that this is really happening. I feel that, that I personally have been warned by dolphins about an impending cataclysm twice.
Well, I know here they had me go out and they said, if you are who I think you are, because they knew the different marks and whatnot, they said, you will call. And I said, well, I've never done it without my grandfather or my father, but they took me to this place. I called five times, and then on the fifth time, there it was, this big, huge, I've never seen a dolphin, whale, whatever it was, so big it actually came to us.
For real.
And so it takes time. So the thing was is that according to Hawaiian legend and whatnot, you have what's called Hale Makua was explaining to me. It's the Ha'i, goes back to Ha'ailio, Ha'aloa, that's your taro. So this is the taro genealogy. And it goes back to Ulu, the breadfruit, Uli, and then the house of Laka. So the house of Laka is like this star navigational house. It looks like a big canoe in the sky. But it's also the genealogy. And it goes back to what they call Kai Kanaka. So the Kai Kanaka, when I first came here, I had to go to this class at the college. And so we had to get up and talk about our families. So I said, okay, I could talk about my family from Wisconsin with cheese, you know, apple pie, whatnot. Or I could talk about my ancient sea tribe, even though I maybe don't look like that. So I got up, I chanted my way in, I held up the 12-pointed star, and my teacher about fell out her chair, and she said, that's the star of Kalaloa. That's the star of the sea god. And then I ended up getting called to a meeting with the navigators, because inside of Satawa, Mao, who taught Nainoa Thompson and whatnot, they have what's called the Halemua. Now, the Halemua is the men's navigational house. So when we saw the movie, we're like, oh, auntie, it's the Halemua. So we went shade our eyes. Three of us did. They're like, okay, it's a video, but three extra points for you who shaded their eyes and had respect for the Halemua. So basically, inside the Halemua, he had the eight-sided mat. Now, the throne of God has eight sides, the seat of God, as they call it. Four forces, four winds, all these things. So the master navigator sits at 3 degrees leeway, because like my father, inside what they call the Temple of the Blue Rose, which is the Halemua, that you have to not fall asleep for more than a certain amount of time. You rest, or you're way off, or the wind will blow you off. So you only have 3 degrees leeway as a master navigator. So then Mao talked about the 32 stars of navigation above the master navigator. So those were the tools. He had different tools that he used. And it was all actually ancient knowledge that was built over time.
Well, let me ask you this. When you made that fifth call and the whale and dolphin being came, had you made a specific request that you wanted to ask it to help you with?
Well, actually, it was more like it looked into my eyes and it made a special request to me, was that you've got to do something. You've got to do something about this ocean mining.
And when was this?
Geez, I'm not too sure of the year, but this man, basically, he's related to the chiefs, and they had told me they were waiting a long time for my family to come. And I told my father, Dad, how are they supposed to recognize us? He says, they will recognize you by your marks. Okay, so we ended up going ashore. We sat at the king's table. And I'm talking about in the 11th century. So they put our sea onion as a tapestry on the wall in the galley. But then we looked at our people out there from the four ships, and they're working as serfs under the king. So we made sure that the king had plenty of food, and we took the tablecloth and we wrapped up all the food and we took it out to the people. And the king couldn't quite understand that. We went up for three generations. We waited for the second-born twin to return. They didn't. And they had with them certain things. And so it ended up, the story was, they came ashore here in Hawaii with those certain things. And those things have since been guarded and whatnot. So yes, it all still does exist. But now here we went from England, after three generations, went on a whaling ship to Nova Scotia, where you'll find a lot of people that know about the 12-pointed star family here and there. And then from Nova Scotia down through Shenandoah in a covered wagon. So somehow this family, this unspoken language that is found 26,000 years old, 100 meters down in the ocean, it's still being used. I believe it's from the days of Oceania, when we all had the same language. It was all connected. And so then this language, it actually goes to ancient Hebrew. It goes to the Hawaiian, Irish Ogham. And so it just looks like dog scratches, like marks. And then the language of Lono, you'll find it all over the island inside the petroglyphs. And so this ancient language, this unspoken language, it's navigational coordinates, it's energy patterns and whatnot. So I believe that, yes, the energy is still here. And if you're looking at something that's immortal, where is it supposed to go? So we actually have to take care of their kinalau, is what Uncle was talking about. And the thing with the sea god, it's with the god above. Yes, we, the people, we have hands. We have things that we can do and things that we should never do. And so as an ancient sea tribe person, I'm very concerned about the ocean mining. And the way I learned about ocean mining was not, oh, because I took marine science and international law. It was because I was working in the newsroom and someone came in and said, oh, I know you've been happy for about 2 weeks because you finally found out how there's an ancient story about how they got their knowledge back. And they got their knowledge. And I knew the story, this 8-year-long story that my father told me every night had to do with the Hawaii people. So I was, so happy. But she came and she said, but that place in the story, that's where the state of Hawaii wants to do ocean mining first.
Well, I told Abel that the Maori have a really cool word. It's called kaitiaki. K-A-I.
Kai, ocean.
T-I-A-K-I. It means a guardian or a protector.
Mm.
So you're a very awesome kaitiaki of Ohana Moana.
Mahalo, but I know for a fact that it's like I can't do it alone, and I haven't been doing it alone. So all throughout, we get the Solwawa warriors. We get when they had the Underwater Mining Institute conference in New Zealand and what they were trying to do over there and their rights to their ocean, and then now throughout the whole Pacific. And so we want to join together, and I know that there's other, I'll call them sea people, out there, different people depend on the ocean, just like my ancestors. And now the thing is, too, is that how can we actually challenge this? And I believe that the different places where they're going to have impacts, and they are having impacts, we got to show that harm. And hopefully we can recuperate the ocean. You know, the major damage has not been done.
We've got to call on the sea god to come back and melt and appear in a million forms at the same time.
Well, the interesting thing about it is I've learned that, so the cells, the body, everything is connected with a certain energy. Okay, so what Uncle was talking about and what Hale Makua was talking about, the singing of the whales, the energy. And so what had happened was I actually almost passed away 3 times, but I saw the same thing. And it was like I didn't have a body, but I was going up towards this round light, and there was singing everywhere. And it was almost like whale singing. It was like I was swimming through the universe. And so Hale Makua, he has a picture of the whales guiding his spirit up with the canoes and whatnot. So I believe that it's like we are connected, and that we would go, we would rejuvenate, we would come back, we might stay a while. But then when I saw that view, I says, wow, we really are connected with the stars. And then in our, if you actually don't hold yourself back, okay, because, you know, God made many miraculous things that sometimes things happen that...
In mysterious ways.
Yes. And so I believe, you know, because I've been, you know, I'm from an HNC tribe, I've been alerted to the ocean mining issue, and so I'm basically pleading. And I know that out there, you know, when the, at a certain point, if it turns, it's like all the fish larvae, the temperature's off, water turbidity, you know, affecting all the, it's genocide. It's cultural genocide.
And ecocide.
Oh, ecocide.
Moana-side.
Moana-side, yes.
But I think, how about this? The whales and dolphins are trying to help us remember our connection with water-based life, not only on this planet, but other planets, possibly in the Pleiades.
Well, my father always did talk about a water planet. He would talk, there's different legends about it. But the thing is now, because... They've gone in certain areas. They're doing like sonar and different things.
They're trying to block all these energies.
Yeah. And so...
microwaves.
We actually found out, even like the HAARP, that it's a matter of physics.
Absolutely. Well, did you know that on Kauai, their microwave transmitters are thousands of times more powerful than anything HAARP ever had? It's one of the most powerful microwave installations on the whole planet.
And see, well, we learned, okay, Halemakua, we said, what are we going to do about the HAARP? And so then he went to try to stop the HAARP with some other people. They're actually going to go try to stop it up in Anchorage, Alaska. So what ends up happening is something happens to him, but we end up doing a prayer, and it was actually at Kauā. And we didn't have, you know, no phones, no mail. They were like, oh, I said, okay, so the 12... we're going to come together. We need help. And so then later, Uncle Abe, I said, Uncle Abe, we got to go over to this place. We end up going to the place. This other lady was there. Okay, on the way there, we read a newspaper. The newspaper says that tomorrow in Honolulu, that they're going to change over the whole jurisdiction of the ocean. We're like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? So we end up there. There's this lady standing like, why am I here? We're like, are you going to Honolulu tomorrow? And so then she says, yes. I says, well, you need to get all the fishermen, storm the Senate, and stop them from doing this. The fishermen made a ring around the state capitol. They actually stormed the Senate, stopped what they call the Bunda Bill, switching over the ocean to the Army Corps of Engineers, which is they're the ones plowing through Native American sites. They don't care. So it never happened. But see, that's what I'm saying. There's something alive. There's something guiding us. And like the lady never didn't even know why she's there. She just standing there just like waiting for us. And then on the way back, this gets back to the HAARP, on the way back, a person who he's on his way to meet with his wife who's swimming with the dolphins all day, pregnant wife. So together they're making this crystal, what they call a crystal, it looks like the Star of David, but it's like a holy place. So he shows it to me, and I said, oh my gosh, that looks like the crystal grid, what the Native Americans taught me. So you make the like a Star of David, you pour water, you put crystals in all the points, every interconnecting point, you sit inside, and you know, by the ocean, by the river, and you put the feather, the prayer feather, what the direction of it. And so I said, wow, that's like the crystal grid. He goes, crystal grid? I says, yes. And he says, oh, you're the one I have to give the message to, you and your people. I says, what is it? He says, what you're supposed to do about the HAARP. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's just like out of the blue kind of thing, like timing, like that. So he said that the E will take care. So I'm like, E, so God, Keakui. He says, not just that, but the jawbone of the E, of the family of E, the E. So that resonates, it's pure physics. So when you chant, when you have your music, you have your drums, you have your flute, you feel the peacefulness because it actually is physically dropping off that HAARP and all that stuff. So God made it that way.
Final concluding comments on everything we've talked about today.
Okay. So I believe that now is the time, and I'm going to come through that, well, I learned my ancient sea tribe ways. I learned the ancient unspoken language before I learned the ABCs. And my father told me, you learn this first, and then one day you'll learn what is an American. So I said, Daddy, what's an American? So then I did learn what was American. And then I found out about the overthrow, because I had looked at submerged crown lands. I was like, wait a minute, in America we don't have crown lands. Like, what does that mean? So then I learned about the overthrow, and since then I was like, wow, I realized that we were censored in America. And that, oh, honest Americans, I'm pleading out to you as an American, that we do have to step forward, and that we have to basically support the Hawaiians and the Hawaiian nationals, and that we need to, as different tribes, different peoples throughout the world, come together and remember we are all Ohana, and that we need to protect what we have here, because things change really fast, and we need to stop different things that are going to affect future generations' survival.
Absolutely. Shelley, thank you so much for sharing. Mucha mahalo.
And thank you. And get your reports into the Seabed Disputes Chamber. You should be able to go online. There is the Ms. Bond, the law library clerk. These documents are supposed to be given out for free. So I encourage you to get those, and to basically what we want to do is put the cease and desist and environmental injunction, and that there is a certain island nation state that may step forward, but some of them were actually worried. Some of the other people involved were worried that they're going to put sanctions on them. But when I'm just going to say this for everybody, that when we did the case number 17, nobody put sanctions on us. The only thing they did was after Patsy Mink had passed away, they locked up and vaulted all of our documents at the Library of Congress. But now those are circulating out, and that I believe that we have to stand together. And aloha, and anybody out there that is related to the Hawaii, the 12-pointed star people, you might say, I'm still looking for my people, although I've found some of them here. And I know that we're scattered throughout the world. And yes, it's all still alive. It's all viable. And we don't want it to change into something. We should never go that way. The thing I want to say, my father would say this same. He will make war from shore to shore until man exists no more. Unless mankind decides the right path. Aloha.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.